So a little backtracking. As you see the slide for the last of the 14 stages that Vishwanath Chakravarti has given us from these verses, the stages of bhakti, I made a mistake, and it was due to being unprepared. I had a conference call at 3:30 this morning and was busy after that doing things, so I came unprepared. Apologies. This verse here, 22, which I was saying should be here, it belongs where it is. It's a transition verse, and the subject matter, previous subject matter, was the stages of bhakti and the necessity of inquiring into the absolute truth as the purpose of dharma, not acquiring something temporary in this world or the next. Material prosperity, or artha, is not the goal of dharma, nor is elevation to the heavenly planets a goal of dharma. In paradharma, the goal is attaining devotional service to the personality of Godhead. And there's this phrase, Vasudeve Bhagavati. You remember that one, right? That was one of the answers. Text number 7. As far as with the essence of all the teachings of all the Vedas. Vasudeva Bhagavati, Bhakti Yoga Prayojataha. So here it is again, invoking or resonating that message of text number 7. So it's connecting this first section to the next coming section. Vasudeva Bhagavati. And the previous verse, text 6, Atma Prasadanim, or Atma Supersedati. It's connecting those verses 6 and 7 by indicating what the next subject matter is. It's devotional service unto Krishna. So the next section, 23, 4, and 5, is very similar to sections of Bhagavad Gita in chapter 7, chapter 9, Bhagavad Gita, where devotional service is the subject matter. So we need to know devotional service unto whom? Well, it's devotional service unto the absolute truth, who is Bhagavan, Krishna. And so that means we also need to say what devotional service isn't, or what the object of worship isn't, or what other forms of worship do not constitute devotional service to Krishna, devotional service or worship of the demigods. Chapter 7, chapter 9 include that discussion, and here it is coming up in the Bhagavatam. Because this is just a quick summary, worship of something other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as Krishna teaches in Bhagavad Gita, may provide one with something that's limited and temporary. Those inspired to worship other than the Supreme Personality of God to do so because they're inspired by the desire to achieve something limited and temporary. Something of this world or something in the next world that's limited and temporary. But we've gone through these prior verses saying that's not the goal of Paradharma, and that's not what worship of the Personality of God or the Absolute Truth is meant for. It's not what Dharma is meant for. But there are those that have that idea. Dharma is meant for achieving something, the fruits of piety in this life and heaven in the next life. I'll share this with you. In four different occasions, I've done a little experiment with audiences that I didn't know. And it was the same result. One was at the University of Jaipur, a hall at least as big as this, bigger, packed with people. And, you know, I didn't know anybody there. So, and then another audience was in Houston, where they have the NASA Space Center near Sugar Land. So, like, all scientists and, you know, research scholars, brilliant people. That kind of an audience. Once was in Bombay, in the BP Petroleum campus with a whole lot of people, like, you know, a hall twice as big as this and filled with people. So I presented the following, like, introduction to the topic of speaking. I said, you're an educated audience. So listen carefully to the following, and as I'm listening, be prepared to raise your hand if you feel that this is the correct understanding. That the purpose of the Vedas and Vedic practice is to provide the human, civilized human beings the opportunity to live out their lives under the codes of the Vedas, where they live by theistic conduct, the quality of goodness, and by so doing, they can enjoy a prosperous life in the quality of goodness, and after this life, attain the heavenly realm. How many would agree? And I found that even before I got to finish the sentence, people had their hands up. They agree. That's the purpose of the Vedas. It's the same thing that Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, that most people think that's the purpose of the Vedas and there's nothing more. He says that in second chapter, Bhagavad Gita. So after that experience, particularly in the University of Jaipur, I said, okay, is there anybody here in the audience that has a different point of view? And way in the back was a college girl who raised her hand. One person. You know, because girls have to sit in the back, right? So she was sitting way in the back. And she raised her hand. Very bold. I thought, wow. So I asked, what's a different point of view? She said, the purpose of the Vedas is to know Krishna. And it becomes possible to know Krishna by serving him, not by accumulating material piety and enjoying the fruits of piety or going to the heavenly planets, but accepting whatever condition Krishna provides us and engaging in his loving service, and that way coming to understand him by hearing the message of the Vedas from a bona fide authority. And I said, you must have been reading Srila Prabhupada's books. She said, yes, I've been reading Prabhupada's books. So the one that stood out of the crowd is exactly what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, and exactly what we've been hearing in the commentaries of the Acharyas, or Srila Prabhupada's writing. Very few people actually want to go back to Godhead. But of those that want to go back to Godhead, there's a means. And the means is to be inquisitive about the absolute truth and to follow the ways of the life of one who's following the pursuit of the absolute truth. It's devotional service to the personality of Godhead. So this is the corrected version of the last slide. Sorry for the confusion earlier this morning. Notice that stage 14 is an add-on to attaining prema, because that's over here, stage 11 and 12, Rati and Prema, he's added two more. Direct darshan of the Supreme Lord, that's down here. One sees the self as the master. By the way, self as the master means with a capital S, the personality of Godhead. But that's the self as the soul is giving direction to the intelligence and mind and senses. And then he's added this one also, direct experience of Hari's sweetness, madhurya anubhava. And here's his explanation. And he's going backwards. Note, this is text 21 for stage 13. He's going backwards to text 20 and saying that it comes after. Following prema, which he's saying is this one, Bhagavat Bhakti Yogata. This is Rati, this is prema. Following attainment of prema, there is realization or direct experience, Vijnanam, of the Lord's form, qualities, pastimes, powers, and sweetness. So he's emphasizing sweetness, madhurya. And then, so here's this connecting. This is summary of the so many descriptions of the stages of bhakti and what bhakti is and what bhakti isn't, as far as paradharma and other things. Now comes text 23 and 24 and 25. This is a description of Vasudeva Bhagavati, worship of the personality of Godhead, in contrast with worship of other forms of the Lord. So, text 23, translation. The transcendental personality of Godhead is indirectly associated with the three modes of material nature, namely passion, goodness, and ignorance. And just for the material world's creation, maintenance, and destruction, he accepts the three qualitative forms of Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. Of these three, all human beings can derive ultimate benefit from Vishnu, the form of the quality of goodness. So in a similar way, in his Tattva Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami describes the quality of goodness is best as described in Bhagavad Gita, several ways in several places. Tamagun, Rajagun, Sattvagun, of the three, Sattvagun is best. It's best for a number of reasons. It's best because from the quality of goodness one can derive knowledge, as opposed to ignorance, or ignorance mixed with passion, where because of passion one becomes attached to fruitive desires, and fruitive desires color the mind, and so one's knowledge is disturbed. It's not pure. But in the quality of goodness, it's one can perceive knowledge. It's something like a window. Over here, there's a wall. There's something on the other side of the wall, but you can't see because the wall's in the way. But over here, there's a window, and through the window, you can see what's on the other side. You're not on the other side, but you can see what's on the other side. The quality of goodness is like that. You're not on the other side yet, but you can see what's on the other side. You can get knowledge. It's theoretical. But then you can open the window and you can, you know, it's cold or it's whatever it is, hot or it's something, fresh air or bad smell or whatever it is. Direct experience. And Vijnana is a quality. One of the qualities of a Brahmana is Vijnana. Sama Dhammak Tapak Shocham Shantir Arjavam Evacha Jnanam Vijnanam Astikyam, Brahma Karma Svabhavajam. Those are situated in the mode of goodness. Have not just, you can see what's on the other side, but you can have, from the quality of goodness, it gives you that entrance into the realization of Brahman, realization of the transcendental, non-dual realm. And so, Vishnu, who's the presiding deity, the expansion of the personality of God, who is presiding over this quality of goodness, in worship of him, he represents, he's a symbol of goodness, and worship of him increases the quality of goodness and decreases passion and ignorance. And so by worship of Vishnu, one can get knowledge. And more than that, the second item mentioned is that one can get liberation. And that is to say, the modes of passion and the modes of ignorance, or the devatas who are presiding over them, Lord Brahma or Lord Shiva, while they may be worshipped, they may grant something that's limited and temporary, but they can't grant liberation. They may point to taking shelter of Lord Vishnu so that one can achieve liberation, but they cannot give liberation. To further explain, or to give an example of this point, is the next verse, text 24, where Vyasadeva writes, or Suta Goswami speaks. It's a metaphor. Firewood is but a transformation of earth. But smoke is better than raw wood. And fire is still better. For by fire, we can derive the benefits of superior knowledge through Vedic sacrifices. Similarly, passion is better than ignorance, but goodness is best, because by goodness one can come to realize the absolute truth. So the goal, referring back to the previous verses, is realization of the absolute truth. That's the goal. Worship is connected to the goal. So worship of Vishnu can give realization of the absolute truth in progressive stages. And similarly, fire, by proper Vedic sacrifice, it awards knowledge. It's one of the purposes of those who engage in sacrifice. It's detachment, but it's advancement towards the position of knowledge, transcendental knowledge. So now we'll go back to the metaphor. Wood is but a transformation of earth. But wood is better than earth, because with wood you can move on the process of making fire. You can't make fire out of earth. But if you have wood, you have a beginning point of making fire. And better than wood is smoke, because it's preliminary to fire. You don't get smoke without heat. It's driving off the moisture that's in the wood. That's what smoke is. And then fire. So fire is a means, by proper use of fire, it's a means of performing Vedic sacrifice. And through Vedic sacrifice, the quality of goodness is entered, the attachment to passion or contact with passion and ignorance is diminished, and one can become situated in goodness, through goodness come to the absolute truth, or knowledge of the absolute truth. And an entrance, realization of the absolute truth. So, in his purport, Prabhupada explains that ignorance is something we want to get away from, because ignorance, I've heard this probably several hundred times from Prabhupada's lectures, ignorance is the root cause of suffering. So we don't want to suffer. We want to get away from suffering. We want to get away from ignorance, because it causes suffering. So passion within society, within civilized society, can, at the upper end at least, give birth to, or give issue forth, philosophy, poetry, architecture, art, creations of beautiful things by the human society. It comes from passion. It's above that, it's not yet realization of God, but it can point in the direction of something divine. It can inspire people away from the activity of ignorance into the direction of the divine. And passion can produce things. It's by nature fruitive, so it produces things, and those things can then be utilized in service to Krishna as opposed to someone that's just asleep or intoxicated or crazy. They produce destruction, not things that can be offered to Krishna. So, in that sense, it's better. There's some other points I'll also bring up that it's better. The verse 25 is a like a therefore verse of this little section. Previously, all great sages rendered service unto the personality of Godhead due to his existence above the three modes of material nature. They worshipped him to become free from material conditions and thus derive the ultimate benefit. Whoever follows such great authorities is also eligible for liberation from the material world. Because going back to Dharma and Paradharma, if you recall, Dharma Shahi Apavargasya Nartotayopakalpate. That's the fruit is ultimate liberation, and ultimate liberation is been also defined, engagement in loving service to the Supreme without material contact. So great sages in the past, they worshipped Lord Vishnu to come to the stage of ultimate liberation. So it's the means to reach that end. And because it's the means to reach that end, it's also on the liberated platform. Brahma-bhuta prasanatma. Na sochati, na kamsati, samak sarveshu bhuteshu, mad bhaktim labhate param. From the Brahma-bhuta stage, from the liberated stage, devotional service begins. Here's what Srila Prabhupada writes, one section from that purport of text 25. There are 12 particular agents of the Lord. This is the Mahajans. 12 Mahajans. Particular agents of the Lord who know the purpose of religion, and all of them render transcendental service unto Krishna. Persons who desire their own good may follow these Mahajans and thus attain the supreme benefit. Once again, going back to the first verse of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Paradharma is the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. The question of the sages, what's the ultimate benefit? So we're not speaking about the intermediate. Bhagavatam is speaking about the ultimate benefit and how to attain it. And when you attain the ultimate benefit, the intermediate attainments are yours. The process may not be yours, but the attainment will be yours. Simple example, if you have $1 million, you have $100 and $10. You're on the top step of the staircase. You've traversed the other steps of the staircase. The benefit to be derived by the other steps of the staircase are included by being on the top. So you may have gone up the elevator, but the benefit to be derived is already there just by being on that top step. The top rung of the yoga ladder, yoginam api sarvesham madgatena antaratmanam, the description of Bhagavad Gita. That's the uttama form of yoga. So it's all pointing to this, the topmost perfectional stage. Although we're not there, we follow the process. The process is the process that gets you there. So once you take up this process and not the other processes, the other processes aren't needed. They're, in fact, diversions. So come to the directly to the topmost dip. A few other points, and end the class there. The Jiva Goswami has, these verses are all very important. So in his Paramatma Sandarbha, one of the six Sandarbhas of Jiva Goswami, he indicates that these expansions of Brahma and Shiva, by scriptural statements, he establishes, they're partial expansions of the Supersoul, Paramatma, or partial expansions of Garbhodakshay Vishnu. And Garbhodakshay Vishnu has as his expansion Paramatma. So they are under the direction of Lord Vishnu, but they don't manifest or contain the fullness of Lord Vishnu. Brahma commonly is a Jiva soul. Lord Shiva is in this own tattva position, Shiva tattva, but not Vishnu tattva. Vishnu is in his own tattva. And the scriptures enjoin that one should seek that supreme cause of all causes, the absolute truth. So worship of the demigods will not accomplish that, is his point. He quotes a verse from Skanda Purana to support this statement. Speaking of Lord Vishnu, he binds the souls with the ropes of birth and death. He unties the ropes of birth and death that bind the souls. In this way, the eternal Lord Vishnu brings liberation. So, one should worship Lord Vishnu because it produces knowledge of the absolute truth. One should worship Lord Vishnu because that worship alone can bring liberation. Third is this is a why passion is better than ignorance. So when we're in ignorance, there's no possibility of even having a clue if you're asleep or you're intoxicated or you're crazy. There's no question of having realization of the absolute truth. In the mode of passion, something like mentioned before, the through arts and various forms of creative expression, cultural expression, born of passion, philosophy, born of passion, there's something that points towards and gives some indication of something superior, something greater, ultimately the supreme, although the conception may not be clear or even accurate, but something that's above us. Another point that he makes is that passion can lead to goodness, but ignorance can't. Someone that's asleep has to wake up first. Someone that's crazy has to become sane first before they can come to the stage of knowledge, factual knowledge. So from passion is better, he's just supporting the verse by logic and scripture. Passion is better than ignorance. Therefore worship that leads to that is better, but worship in the quality of goodness is best. And the worship in the quality of goodness is made possible through worship of Lord Vishnu. And therefore similarly fire is better. As fire is better, worship of Lord Vishnu is similarly better. And it brings this auspiciousness to our whatever inauspicious existence, whatever misfortune is prevalent in our lives. Sometimes there's fortune, sometimes there's misfortune. And it happens to everybody in different degrees. Some fortune, some misfortune. So that which brings not only the mode of goodness fortune, but Vishuddha Sattva, transcendental good fortune, This is made possible through the worship of Vishnu alone. And therefore, that's being advised. So this is a little section making a contrast between worship of the personality of Godhead and the worship of demigods. Krishna addresses this in the 7th and 9th chapters of Bhagavad Gita, as mentioned. And here's how the Bhagavatam is treating the same subject. If you can recall from the analysis given by Bhaktivinoda Thakur of why it is that there's obstacles on the path of, if the process of devotional service is so wonderful, why might one not derive instantly the full benefit from that? And one of the first ones was Vibhrama Tattva, having a mistaken conception of what is truth or what is. So if one has a mistaken conception of what is the proper object of worship, worship will be there in any case because it's intrinsic to the soul. That's discussed in Bhagavad Gita in the 12th chapter when Arjuna wants to know from Krishna, if people don't worship you, not 12th chapter, divisions of faith. If persons don't worship you, are they going to worship something else? And the answer is yes, they worship something else because worship is intrinsic to the soul. In the purified state, we worship Krishna. We worship the Supreme. If we don't worship the Supreme, we'll worship something else. According to the modes of nature, we'll worship something else. It gives divisions of faith and goodness, passion, and ignorance. Worship the ghosts and spirits. Worship rock stars and politicians and movie stars. Or worship the demigods. Or worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But worship we're going to do, because it's intrinsic to the soul. It's what souls, part of what souls do. So repose, the Bhagavatam is guiding us how to repose that tendency of the soul to worship upon the absolute truth. And there's not multiple absolute truths, not multiple sources of all things. There's one source of all things. And the other things in the modes of nature aren't going to take you there. In other words, it's not whatever you want to worship, it's okay. Yatama tatopat. It's not so. According to one variety, urdvam gacchanti sattvasta. You'll go to one destination if it's worship in the quality of goodness. Or yanti deva vrata devan, pitran yanti pitri vrataha. Bhutani yanti bhuteja. There's different destinations according to the nature of one's worship and the object. So the Bhagavatam is encouraging us here in these section of verses, Vasudeve Bhagavati, worship Krishna, the absolute truth. So later on, as the Bhagavatam unfolds, just finish with this, there's descriptions of Krishna or forms of the Lord as they appear, avatars, because that's another one of the questions. And then beautiful descriptions of the appearances of forms of the Lord in this world. So one may worship Lord Nrisimhadev, or one may worship Lord Narayan, or one may worship Lord Ram, or forms of Vishnu Tattva. And that subject matter, the forms of the Lord, the qualities of the Lord, the pastimes of the Lord, all of these subject matters of katha, Vasudeva katha, there, or Krishna katha, they carry one to that spiritual realm. And that's what the Bhagavatam does. It takes that essential message that we're hearing now in these verses and then just expands them. Prabhupada gives the example of sandalwood. What happens when you rub sandalwood? besides you get sandalwood paste, there's a fragrance that comes when you rub sandalwood. Yes? So you rub or massage or engage in making the vibration of Srimad Bhagavatam, and it's very fragrant. Its essence carries one into that spiritual realm. The four Kumaras, when they came to the gates of Vaikuntha, they didn't even enter Vaikuntha. They didn't see the form of the Lord. They just smelled the fragrance of the sandalwood and the tulsi buds anointing his lotus feet. And they became personally realized bhaktas just from that stimulus on the spiritual platform. Or Shukadev Goswami, he was also Brahman realized, as were the four Kumaras. But by hearing the topics of Srimad Bhagavatam, he who had no attraction for anything material, he was already at that Brahman realization, neutral, shanti, shanti, shantihi stage. He was already there. He had no attraction for anything material, but he had incredible attraction for hearing the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, meaning, or illustrating, that it's fully transcendental subject matter that can attract the mind of the Paramahamsa. He who has no attraction for anything material becomes attracted to the personality of Godhead and the topics in relation to him. Now, for those of us that aren't Paramahamsas, the same potency is there just by massaging the topics of the Bhagavatam in the association of devotees of the Lord. It carries us to that realm. The potency is released. Invested within the Bhagavatam is that potency, and hearing and chanting the topics brings that potency out. Like biting into a juicy gulabjamun. The juice just sits there, and the juice comes out. Like that. Okay. And there, see if there's some discussion. Points you want to bring up? Anyone? All the way in the back? I bet I can hear you better without the microphone. Because I couldn't hear what you said.
Actually, is demigod worship part of devotional service?
Is demigod worship part of devotional service?
Is it called devotional service?
Cause?
Called as devotional service.
Caused by?
Called.
Called. Is demigod worship called devotional service? That's your question? Yeah, wait. The answer is no. Next question? Depends on which worship and what his purposes are. Rikasura, it was definitely tamasic. He, you know, what did he want from Lord Shiva? Somebody, whoever's head I touch will crack open into 100 pieces. Someone may want from Lord Shiva the liberation. That's different. So, you know, the mood of the person approaching may be different. Okay?
So, when you do service to Krishna, that is only the devotional service, right? Devotional service is just serving Lord Krishna.
That's different than what you said before. Yes. Devotional service means the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Other kinds of service are also service. We can serve the country, we can serve our family, we can serve a dog, we can serve nature. You know, we have lots of ways of doing service because we're servants. But devotional service is specific. Bhakti is meant for the Supreme Personality of God. Prabhupada explains this in the purport of the last verse of chapter 6. Bhakti means Krishna. He explains that we should respect all living entities. And if we don't respect someone, it's discourteous or bad. But one who fails to respect or worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he becomes thoroughly condemned by the material energy. Put in prison. Called the material world. For neglect of devotional service, worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the means to get out of prison, or that mood of neglecting the Personality of Godhead, is devotional service. Are released from prison. The cycle of birth and death. Material embodiment and all of the laws that are in the prison house. Okay?
I don't mean to pose this as a trick question, but
interesting prelude.
I'm just struggling
but here it is.
To worship Krishna properly. I don't have any trouble with demigod worship, but I know that serving a servant is devotional service, correct?
Sure.
Okay, so if somebody serves a demigod who's also a devotee of Lord Krishna, are they also serving a servant?
It depends on how they see the demigod. And for that matter, it depends on how they see a Vaishnava. They might see a Vaishnava as God. They might see the demigod as God. Or they might see as demigod as the purpose of this is to receive limited and temporary benefits. So if you worship the Personality of Godhead Krishna, he doesn't reward that. There's prayers in the fifth canto, I think it's chapter 18, prayers by the residents of Jambudweep. There's a very nice section of prayers where they're offering prayers to the various personalities, devatas. Then they get to Lord Vishnu and they say he's unique. Because he doesn't, if you approach him for something material, he may not give that something material, thinking, why should I give this fool something material? It'll just implicate him in complexities of the laws of nature. But if I do give him that something, I'll give him that something in such a way he'll never come back for that something anymore. I'll give him my two lotus feet instead. Like Dhruva Maharaj. He got his kingdom. But he was free from the desire of having that kingdom when he got the kingdom. Or Nalakuvir and Manigriva. When they went back to being the sons of Kuvera in Kuvera's abode in heaven, they went back as pure devotees without the pride and the spirit of being enjoyers of being the sons of the king of heaven. Excuse me, the treasure of the heavenly planets. That's Lord Vishnu. And the others, it's not the same. Even if we worship them. However, they also have a function. Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, the goddess of fortune, and the four Kumaras, they're heads of sampradayas, Vaishnava sampradayas, where they want to award pure bhakti. So one can approach them in that mood. So it depends on the mood of approach. Yeah, and the motivation, purity of purpose. Yes. Okay.
Maharaj, like, are there any references in the scriptures? Let's say if somebody without any ulterior motives has a natural attraction for Lord Shiva or Ganesha and then keep worshipping them, are there any references in scriptures that the Lord Shiva or Lord Ganesha directs them to the worship of Lord Vishnu?
I don't know of any. It takes a Vaishnava to do that. Here's an example in the fourth canto of Bhagavatam of Lord Shiva approaching the Prachetas and directing them to the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. But they weren't like wishing to worship Lord Shiva. He was just simply pleased by them and gave them mercy in the form of the prayers that he recites. And they then attain darshan of Lord Vishnu. Again, it goes back to intention. Yayitam mam prapadyante tang sataiva bhajamyaham. So one who approaches this one or that one, according to the desire of the living entity or the intention or the regard that living entity has for the personality of God, he'll respond accordingly. Okay? Whether it comes from Ganesh or Lord Shiva or whoever. That may be an instrument of the Lord's message, this way or that way. The special position of a Vaishnava is just giving the ultimate thing. Because that's the ultimate benefit. And that's what the Bhagavatam is doing. And that's what devotees who are following the Bhagavatam do. Then there's no risk involved. Yes. You're okay. Back here.
Yesterday, we were discussing that in the unsteady stage of bhakti, one maintains the standard of devotional service way beyond one's capacity. So, my question is, what is good for
the devotees? Can you just say the question without reading it? I think I would get it better.
Okay. So, yesterday, we were discussing that in the.
With the microphone, but just don't read it, just say it.
In the unsteady stage of bhakti,
in the unsteady stage of bhakti,
one maintains the standard way beyond their capacity.
One may
maintain the standard of devotional service.
Maintain or try to reach?
Maintain.
Maintain. One may maintain a standard beyond their reach. Did I say that?
I think she means try to.
Try to. Okay, we're doing sadhana bhakti. And we should be striving to go the next step, or next level, next attainment, or next stage of bhakti. Yes? That's what you're meaning to say? That's not what you're meaning to say. No.
Actually, my question is, what is good for the devotee in such an unsteady stage, whether to maintain such standards or to maintain some low standard where we can
maintain steadiness and then hold there for some time, desiring to go to the next. And when that strength and determination and some indication, those guiding you, etc., encourage you, let's go to the next step. Then you go to the next step. And then maintain that. Better that than the quantum leap forward and quantum leap backward and bouncing around. Maintain at least a minimum standard that you do on a daily, regular basis. Secure that steadily. And then take another step. And then take another step. And then take another step. Does that address your question? Okay.
Thank you. the person Bhagavatam, the most Bhagavatam.
Okay.
So I'm trying to understand who is this person Bhagavatam? Is he by show of any devil? Or is it referred to here to whom?
It refers to Bhagavata means in relation to Bhagavan. So I think it's fair to say there are degrees. The speaker of the Bhagavatam, once particularly one who is following and living by the standards of the Bhagavatam, is the person Bhagavata in relation to Bhagavan. But again, that person, that the part of the definition is they're strict followers of the Bhagavata. They live their lives by it. That's the statement that's found in the... I could read you the passage from the Prabhupada's purport. That's what it says. Because they've internalized that message, their personification of. And there are, so again, there are degrees of that. Yes? Within our practical experience. So we could make a narrow or make a very broad definition. There are very narrow and there are very broad definitions of a pure devotee. Not just a devotee, but a pure devotee. They're broad and there's very narrow definitions. But minimally, one who is a strict follower of, they have received and their lives are the exhibition of the message of the Bhagavatam. They speak it and they live it. By both prachar and achar. That's the person Bhagavat. Is that all right? Okay, everybody's happy. Peaceful. Me too. We can end. Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Swami Nasrodha Swami Maharaj Ki Jai.